Gary Knoll. Today is a special edition of our program. Normally, I'd be sitting here at my desk and broadcasting through a microphone, but I wanted to put this on video streaming. So we're streaming, live video streaming, from my study here in Florida. And the reason is because I want you to see some documents. I want you to see them, capture them, and share them with everyone that you can, or at least everyone who cares about health and truth. Why? Because over the past 3 weeks, I presented more than five individuals sharing their scholarship on what's wrong with the narrative on the coronavirus pandemic. Yes, it's a real virus. It's very dangerous. It's easily spread. But they all are concluding that it was human-made in a laboratory. How it got out, in all probability, this is completely subjective, was it was an accident, meaning someone was infected and left the institute. But everything else is factual. And last evening, I was given a call and said, you got to watch Steve Hilton. He does a show on something, The Revolution. And he only had facts. And he managed to get some documents that we have not yet gotten. We had a lot of documents that showed you the money trail, that showed you the funding, that showed you, for example, all the people that worked on the coronavirus over the years. We showed you that this whole pandemic has been exploited. It has been weaponized and therefore commercialized and is used for the new reset. It is also used to, in effect, to manipulate us into believing that we have no power, the government has all the power. And indeed, at this moment, that seems to be the case. And what I was thinking, and it's just common sense, why has there been only an emphasis to quarantine, wear masks, social distance, and the vaccine's number one, and not a single comment by our government leaders on let's get everyone taking vitamin D3. After all, didn't Spain just give its citizens all vitamin D3? And after they gave all that vitamin D3, down came COVID. Yeah, Spain's a good example. They're not the only country. Other countries giving vitamin D3 are seeing an absolute collapse in their death rates and infectivity. Secondly, since when does testing positive for something mean you actually have the disease in an active state and therefore should be quarantined or given medication? And yet here we're saying, oh, we're using a false test, the PCR. And by the way, later this week, I should have the complete interview that I did with Dr. Carrie Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize in chemistry in 1993 for discovering the PCR. And you'll hear him saying, do not use my test for viral load or diagnosing. It's not meant for that. It's got great applications. It amplifies something. You take a tiny, tiny little sliver and you can amplify it a billion times, but it's still a tiny little piece. And he said, you could be finding something that's a 10-year-old virus. You're not sick. Your body's already defeated it. But in the current nomenclature, if you test positive, you then are a case and therefore justifying the propaganda to keep everybody in line and mandate, wherever possible, the vaccine. Additionally, we know that a healthy diet, losing weight, de-stressing, exercising, and having the proper supplements like zinc and calcium, magnesium, vitamin C, are all good for maintaining a strong immune system. All right? None of that is being shared. Wouldn't you think that that would be the first thing you would do? Is help people at home to prevent the infection by building up their immune system, but not a word. So suddenly I'm questioning, why are they that disconnected from reality? We don't know that answer. We don't know their motives. We just know that their actions show that they're either extraordinarily incompetent, grossly, deadly incompetent, or there's some other malfeasance at work. So what we did over the last 3 weeks, we presented as much hard evidence to show you that we don't have a pandemic, that if we take the measures I'm suggesting and give drugs that are known to work, and the scientific literature is there, hundreds of studies from the peer-reviewed literature of ivermectin at low doses, 3 milligrams, 5 milligrams, for a whole day, 15 milligrams, and boom, it knocks it out. Every single study, it knocks it out. In fact, the overall survival with it is around 80%. That's huge. I mean, that's huge. No vaccine is going to work that well, even if it did work, and it's still experimental. We don't know. But they said no to that. And hydroxychloroquine with zinc and azithromycin, that also works. And we have the studies proving it. What do? They go to the one guy, Professor Riesch over at Yale University, MD, PhD, highly distinguished, 300 articles in peer-reviewed literature. And he's saying this is one of the safest, most effective drugs he's ever seen. And they get all of his colleagues to write letters attacking him. He had never had that in a long and distinguished career as one of America's leading epidemiologists. So everyone who spoke out was attacked, no matter what their background, truth, qualifications. Now, here's what's interesting. They don't want you taking drugs known to prevent it in caseworkers, doctors, nurses, orderlies, anyone in the hospital that's proven to prevent it. They don't want you taking it. So if you start getting any symptoms, you take it early, the drugs that work, that are FDA approved and safe. They don't want you taking that. They want you just to wait around until you're finally sick enough, you have to go into a hospital, and then they'll give you, you know, whatever medication that they deem best, which is also experimental. That doesn't make any sense unless you have another agenda. So you're saying the only thing you can do is wear masks, now double mask, and social distance and get the vaccine. This is extraordinarily not just wrong, but it's also, it is the most maniacal and manipulative public health policies I've ever seen. And who's behind all this? Anthony Fauci. Had the American journalists done their homework on how he mismanaged at deadly consequences through on AIDS, they would not have him leading us as the world's most important scientist now. And the World Health Organization, notorious for corruption and manipulation, wrong information, notorious. For decades, they've been wrong. And yet, they're now heralded as this great bastion of scientific integrity. We're doing it all wrong. You're going to get the facts. Remember, you already know. Get rid of all the colas and the sugar and animal proteins, refined carbohydrates. Bring down your calories to meet your body's requirements. Fast between dinner and breakfast the next day. Don't have any snacks. Exercise about, I would say, 3 hours a week total for the average person. De-stress through listening to music, petting, loving someone, you know, holding hands, going for walks, being with nature, green time, and meditation, yoga, prayer. It all works. Brings down cortisol. When cortisol is elevated, your brain cells are on inflamed. Cytokine storms, kills you. So we know how, we have the evidence of how to stay healthy in the midst of an unhealthy pandemic. And then quarantining people the way they have, which is cruel and not based upon any science. The evidence is in, the epidemiology is in. The more you quarantine people, especially those who are older and alone, and they're disconnected from their loved ones and social interactions, especially school kids committing suicide, not a word about that. Mismanaging how people in nursing homes are taken care of, New York State, Andrew Cuomo, no, not held accountable. So here's evidence now, and look at what Steve has done. In my opinion, he deserves a Pulitzer Prize for this reporting. But we've been saying this and proving this and publishing the documentation and writing articles. In fact, if you go to a new site, vaccinenation.org, or what is it, vaccinenation.net, one of the two. Anyhow, it's brand new, and it has all the best articles from Barbara Lowe Fisher, from Robert F. Kennedy Jr., from Richard Gell, myself, on vaccines, on COVID, on 5G, on all the important investigative reporting we do. It's all there, right in front of you. So you can read the literature, share the literature, share these articles, since everywhere else, all these would be deplatformed. We do not allow freedom of speech today. We do not allow journalists to do their work. So that's why I'm doing this. Now, watch. As Steve Hilton does an original report a week ago Sunday evening, and last night he did another report when he was challenged. Of course they're going to go after him, but he got documentation. No one has seen that proves absolutely where the coronavirus came from, because it's in the genome and it matches something they found in the patents. And who owns it? And Anthony Fauci's position in it, and also the guy who's right now, as we speak, over there doing the, you know, official investigation, like the 9/11 investigation, doing an official investigation of the origins of Wuhan virus. They're not even going to the Wuhan laboratory. Why? Because the man who is there was the man who got money from Anthony Fauci and then gave that money over to Wuhan to do that gain of function research. What a conflict of interest. None of this will be criticized by the mainstream media, but you'll have the proof. Download it, document it. Now to Steve Hilton.
Evening, everyone, and welcome to The Next Revolution. I'm Steve Hilton, and this is the home of positive populism, pro-worker, pro-family, pro-community, and especially pro-America. Tonight, our special investigation continues. New revelations, more evidence about the true origins of the coronavirus pandemic. As we stated last week, we are not accusing anyone of intentionally creating and unleashing this virus on the world. But we have 2 million dead, over 400,000 here in America, economic and social catastrophe not seen for 100 years. If there is even a remote possibility that it started in a lab from work commissioned by our own government, work that as far as we know is still going on, don't you think we should not just investigate that in an open way, but make it our top priority? If we don't, we could be here doing this all over again with another pandemic in another couple of years. And after the new evidence we'll show you tonight, evidence that comes directly from our own National Institutes of Health, any reasonable person will conclude that the idea that the pandemic did originate in the Wuhan lab and was the result of a project initiated and funded by our own government. That idea seems not like a remote possibility, but a near certainty. On Tuesday, Vice President Kamala Harris took her second dose of the vaccine at the National Institutes of Health. She was introduced by NIH Director Francis Collins with Dr. Fauci, head of one of those institutes, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, or NIAID, in the front row. Here's part of what she said.
Growing up, my mother, our mother, would go. We always knew that mommy was going to this place called Bethesda. Mommy's going to Bethesda. Now we're living in California. My mother would go to Bethesda. And of course, what she was doing is she was coming here to NIH. And she was in the biochemical endocrinology study section. She was a peer reviewer. That's what my mother did. She reviewed grants.
That's how NIH research grants are made, peer reviewed. The vice president's mother did it for breast cancer research. But then in one particular area, in one particular year, there was a change. In December 2017, a new policy was put into place that required research involving potential pandemic pathogens to go through a secret HHS panel. Soon after, this panel secretly approved 2 viral gain-of-function experiments. After an outcry, officials said they would work to improve transparency. But why the secrecy in the first place? This is research that the man on stage with the vice president, Francis Collins, and the man in the front row, Dr. Fauci, had proudly championed just a few years before. In 2011, in the Washington Post, they described gain-of-function research as a risk worth taking. They said that important information and insights can come from generating, their words, a potentially dangerous virus in the laboratory. But in 2014, the Obama administration placed a moratorium on this kind of research, citing recent biosafety incidents at federal research facilities. And to be clear, it was not just a ban on new experiments being carried out by government scientists, or even here in America. It was a ban on funding them anywhere. That ban was announced in October 2014 with a request that existing projects be paused. But as we showed you last week, the NIAID carried on funding this research, regardless. $666,000 in May 2014, before the ban. $630,000 in 2015, after the ban. $611,000 in 2016, after the ban. $597,000 in 2017, after the ban. The ban was lifted in December 2017, but three payments were made by the Institute, totaling more than $1.8 million while the ban was in place. And as we shall see, those were crucial years. The NIAID grant money was awarded to EcoHealth Alliance, run by this man, Peter Daszak. He established working with Shi Zhengli, head of the Infectious Diseases Unit at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, that the 2002 SARS epidemic started with a bat coronavirus originating in Guangdong Province, China. The NIAID wanted to know where the next one might come from and whether there was a chance that it could mutate into a virus that wasn't just zoonotic, animals infecting humans, but could actually be passed from human to human through the air via the respiratory system. That's what the project, contracted to Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance, was designed to find out. And then it was subcontracted to Peter Daszak's SARS collaborator, Shi Zhengli, in the Wuhan Institute. She had been busy. In 2012 and 2013, her team made multiple visits to the Tongguan mine near Mojang in Kunming, Yunnan province, where six miners who'd been cleaning up the mine by shoveling bat feces became sick with a SARS-like illness, of which three of them died. The Wuhan Institute team found 152 different bat coronaviruses in that mine. They checked to see how many were associated with a new SARS-type illness. The answer? One. Here it is. BTCOV4991. At that exact time, our own NIAID was paying the Wuhan Institute to answer this question. Could a bat coronavirus that causes a SARS-like illness become so contagious that it could be transmitted human to human, what the project called emergence and spillover potential? Remember, the miners in that cave were each infected separately. They didn't infect anyone else, not their families, no one in their communities, not the medical staff who looked after them. So the Wuhan Institute knew that this natural bat virus could infect humans at high doses, could cause a SARS-like illness that could be fatal, and was not very transmissible between humans. It was the perfect match for the NIAID grant asking them to explore emergence potential. All they needed to do was use the tools of viral gain-of-function research explicitly detailed in the grant. The crucial part is on screen now. Use reverse genetics to see what changes to the naturally occurring virus would make it capable of infecting human cells easily and efficiently in the lab. Is that what they did? Well, as is so often the case, the cover-up can illuminate the truth. Last year, the Wuhan Institute published a paper saying that the pandemic virus was very similar to one they had in their library, RATG13. They said they just found it. But if you run that sequence through GenBank, a kind of genetic database, there's exactly one 100% match, BTCOV4991, the virus they found years before, the one from the mine, the only one out of the 152 that related to a new strain of SARS. Why didn't they reveal that? Why did they change the name? It's the closest known bat virus to the pandemic virus. The variations are almost entirely in two places. In technical language, the spike receptor binding domain and the furin cleavage site. In plain English, the places that affect how contagious it is and how effectively it can enter human cells in the respiratory system. Those are the exact places in the viral sequence where gain-of-function techniques would be applied if, to pick a random example, you were funded by the NIAID to research bat coronaviruses to explore emergence or spillover potential. That exact work was even described in the progress report we showed you last week, tied directly to the NIAID grant. They analyzed bat coronaviruses and sequenced their genetic information. They then built various chimeras, genetically engineered new viruses, man-made in the lab. They infected human cells with them in the lab, and they then showed that their man-made viruses could replicate as a functional virus. The crucial question is this: were they doing all that with the virus they found in the mine, the virus that caused the SARS-like illness? The match between that virus and the work commissioned by NIAID is so perfect, It's impossible to believe they weren't. We now know that workers in the Wuhan lab got COVID in the fall of 2019. They were the first identified cases of the outbreak. And what is the alternative explanation? Those directly implicated here, the Chinese regime and Peter Daszak, who is in an outrageous conflict of interest, the only US representative on the current WHO investigation, they're pushing a natural origin theory. But to swallow that, you'd have to believe in a laughably implausible set of coincidences. Multiple different species of bats in Yunnan province would have had to infect each other and some other unknown animal. Then either these animals or an infected human would need to have traveled 1,000 miles without infecting anyone until they got to Wuhan. The virus, in its first incarnation, before any mutations, would have been 10 to 20 times more infectious than any previously observed virus occurring in nature. And most incredibly of all, the infected animal or human would have somehow chosen to make their 1,000-mile trek to the only place in all of China with a lab that for years had been working on the viruses it was already infected with. In February last year, the Chinese regime replaced the head of the Wuhan Institute of Virology with the head of their bioweapons program. Vital evidence was destroyed, as NBC News reported this week. For a year, the Chinese regime has blocked investigations. But they're not the only government engaged in a cover-up. For 2 weeks, we've been reaching out to the NIH and the NIAID to respond to the story we broadcast last week. On Friday, the NIH did finally respond with this statement. We asked them to comment on this project, commissioned in 2014. On screen now, you'll see the project number and the key sentence specifying gain-of-function research. The NIH statement says, the research supported under the grant to EcoHealth Alliance did not involve the enhancement of the pathogenicity or transmissibility of the viruses studied. But here's the project that their statement links to. It's a different project with a different number. They're right to say that this project doesn't include gain-of-function research, but that's not the one we asked about. The one we asked about, as we showed you, does include gain-of-function research. And worse still, look at this. In their statement, the NIH said, for information about the distribution to sub-awardees, please visit usaspending.gov and switch from prime awards to sub-awards in the upper right corner. Well, we did exactly that. And look what we found. 6 payments to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And look at the project number listed against 5 of those payments. Not the one that the NIH used for their denial, but the one that unquestionably includes gain-of-function research. And the same NIAID project ID listed in the Wuhan Institute's November 2017 progress report, which literally describes the gain-of-function experiments they used to do exactly what the NIH denied they did in their statement, enhance the pathogenicity or transmissibility of the viruses studied. The statement we received from the NIH is totally deceptive. At the top of their statement, they say, this is attributable to NIH generally, not a specific individual. Well, that's not good enough. We're talking about the origins of a pandemic that has killed 2 million people and devastated the world. Did Francis Collins, head of the NIH, approve this statement before it went out? Will he stand behind it now, even after we have demonstrated how deceptive it is? Will Dr. Fauci stand behind it? Here's where we stand tonight. You can blame China for the lab accident, the leak. But lab accidents happen all over the world, including here in America. That's exactly why the Obama administration banned gain-of-function research. Once the leak happened and the virus was circulating in Wuhan, you can certainly blame the Chinese regime for their cover-up and for allowing an outbreak to become a global pandemic. But the origin of this virus, the reason it exists, the reason it's so contagious and infectious, the responsibility for that is increasingly clear. These 2 men who decided to ignore the Obama administration's ban on research that they said was a risk worth taking. Of course, Dr. Collins or Dr. Fauci didn't create the pandemic on purpose. That is obviously ludicrous. They've dedicated their careers to fighting disease. But there's now very little doubt that one of their weapons of choice in that fight did lead to this pandemic. And actually, that wasn't an unthinkable accident and complete surprise. They were warned it could happen. Not only warned, but explicitly asked by the Obama administration to stop this kind of research, to stop doing it and to stop funding it. But they did it anyway. For that, surely they must be accountable. I mean, who else should we hold accountable? Let's not be partisan about this. Joe Biden banned this research, or at least the administration of which he was vice president did in 2014. But Collins and Fauci ignored that ban and continued to fund the research, which almost certainly ended up creating this pandemic. Why isn't Joe Biden furious about that? Why hasn't the president or Jen Psaki or Dr. Collins or Dr. Fauci been asked about this? Are we still funding this stuff? Is it still happening in some lab somewhere, either in China or anywhere else? Why is NIH putting out deceptive statements about their role? Isn't this pandemic bad enough without us potentially funding and incubating the next one? We'll post all the documents we featured tonight so you can see the evidence for yourself. Please follow us at Steve Hilton X and at NextRev FNC. So, what should we do about all this? Miranda Devine and Congressman Guy Reschenthaler joins us next. He's got an important announcement. Don't go. Focus on what actions we need to take based on what we've learned. I'm joined now by Fox News contributor and New York Post columnist Miranda Devine and Pennsylvania Congressman Guy Reschenthaler. Congressman, great to see you. You've been following this closely for many, many months. You've got an announcement for us, which I think people will be very interested in. Tell us what you've been working on.
I do, Stephen. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. So I've been working on this issue since April or May of last year. And what I did is on Thursday, I introduced a bill which would defund EcoHealth Alliance. It would also call for a report to see how much money EcoHealth Alliance sent to the Institute of Virology in Wuhan. So I'm announcing it for the first time live on your show.
Origins of COVID-19. You don't want to miss it. Welcome back. Let's get straight to tonight's special investigation. The coronavirus pandemic is one of the most destructive events in the history of the world. The virus itself, of course, but also the lockdowns, championed here by Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's now been given even more power by President Biden. Here was Fauci last week.
I am honored to announce that the United States will remain a member of the World Health Organization. Yesterday, President Biden signed letters retracting the previous administration's announcement to withdraw from the organization. And those letters have been transmitted to the Secretary General of the United Nations and to you, Dr. Tedros, my dear friend.
Seems to us that after the facts we're about to lay out for you, Dr. Fauci is going to need dear friends in high places. In the next few minutes, you'll see the evidence that points to the most likely cause of the pandemic, and it is worse than anything you've heard so far. The story starts with one of the pandemic's more surprising side effects. You may have heard late last year that Denmark decided to cull its entire population of mink. Here in America, a mink in Utah was the first wild animal found to have the virus. So what is it with the mink? Well, it turns out that mink and related animals have respiratory systems that operate similarly to humans. That's why about 10 years ago, researchers at Erasmus Medical Center in the Netherlands embarked on a series of experiments involving ferrets. They were trying to see if a virus that starts off without the ability to be transmitted through the air can eventually gain that ability. The answer was yes. They discovered that by injecting an influenza virus from one ferret to another until the virus mutated enough to be transmitted through the air by aerosol droplets. This led to the creation of an entirely new type of scientific research made possible by advances in gene technology or genomics. It was called gain-of-function virus research. The idea was to replicate in a lab what had been done with those ferrets, to take a virus and then manipulate its genetic code to make it stronger and more powerful. The virus would gain new functions, hence the name. gain-of-function virus research for some showed huge promise. If we could engineer the most contagious deadly viruses ourselves in lab conditions, we could learn about potential treatments and vaccines without the calamity of an actual outbreak. The driving principle of gain-of-function research was a noble one: know your enemy so you can better prepare to fight it. Over the years, gain-of-function virus research has been carried out all over the world with funding from our own National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. And one of the leading laboratories in gain-of-function research was based in China. It's a place the world has come to know well, the Wuhan Institute of Virology. But as well as having great potential to help mankind, gain-of-function research could also hurt us. Imagine if a deadly virus engineered in the lab to be incredibly contagious somehow escaped from the lab. It could wreak havoc precisely because it was designed to do that, not by nature, but by us. For this reason, gain-of-function research has always been highly controversial. In fact, in 2014, the Obama administration went so far as to place a complete moratorium on this kind of research, quote, following recent biosafety incidents at federal research facilities. Here's what they said at the time. The funding pause will apply to gain-of-function research projects that may be reasonably anticipated to confer attributes to influenza, MERS, or SARS viruses such that the virus would have enhanced pathogenicity and/or transmissibility in mammals via the respiratory route. Now, despite the controversy surrounding this type of research, it always had one steadfast champion, a leading figure in the world of infectious diseases: Anthony Fauci. His institute funded that first ferret study. At the time, he co-wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post describing this research as, quote, a risk worth taking. Important information and insights can come from generating a potentially dangerous virus in the laboratory. And shortly before the Obama administration's ban on gain-of-function research in 2014, Fauci commissioned this. It was a project to assess the risk of new coronaviruses emerging from wild animals, like bats. One of its stated aims was to see what viruses can infect both animals and humans. Now, pay close attention to these words right at the end of the project summary. Predictive models of host range, i.e. emergence potential, will be tested experimentally using reverse genetics, pseudovirus and receptor binding assays, and virus infection experiments across a range of cell cultures from different species and humanized mice. That is a description of viral gain-of-function research, the exact type of research that the Obama administration stopped. But Fauci didn't stop it. He continued on by subcontracting it to this group, EcoHealth Alliance, based in New York. It's run by a big name in the field of virus research, Peter Daszak. He's a zoologist who specializes in wildlife diseases. His claim to fame, and it's a big one, is that he was the person who first discovered the bat origin of the SARS pandemic just over a decade ago. Daszak established that the virus came from bats via a civet cat in a Chinese market. Ever since then, Daszak developed a reputation as the Batman. He and his team would literally go to remote jungle caves to collect bat samples for scientific research. The project that Fauci commissioned gave EcoHealth Alliance more than $3 million over the course of 6 years, despite the Obama administration's ban. And here we come to the crucial step, which has never before been reported. Peter Daszak himself subcontracted a key piece of the Fauci project, the gain-of-function piece. He gave that to a well-known center of expertise in gain-of-function virus research, which specialized in bat coronaviruses. Yep, he gave it to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. The question is, did they give it to us? Let's see what they did with the Fauci money. In the project's results page, there are 13 papers co-authored by Xi Zhengli, who is head of the Wuhan Institute's Infectious Disease Unit. One of the papers was published in 2017, roughly halfway through the project. Peter Daszak is listed as a co-author. It's a kind of progress report. Inside the funding section of that paper is the ID of the Fauci Commission project. That's the money trail. Until now, the only reporting on Fauci's role in all this has been on his funding of the Wuhan lab in general. But tonight we can go further. Thanks to this paper, we can see the specific activity that Fauci funded. And it's terrifying. So terrifying, in fact, that after we reached out to the NIH and Peter Daszak's group for comment, this paper was mysteriously taken offline on Friday for a while. But we downloaded it weeks ago. Here are the details. We're putting the actual scientific language on screen now, but this is what it means in plain English. They collected samples of bat feces from a cave near Kunming in Yunnan Province, China. They found many novel bat coronaviruses in the feces. They analyzed them and sequenced their genetic information. They then built various chimeras, genetically engineered new viruses, man-made, in the lab. They infected human cells with them in the lab. And they then showed that their man-made viruses could replicate as a functional virus. Here's the most important part. The genetic changes they made in the lab unlocked a highly specific doorway into the human body. The virus that causes COVID-19 uses that same exact doorway. To be clear, none of the genetically engineered viruses created back in 2017 and reported in this paper were the exact ones we're dealing with now. But what they confirm is that it was possible to make the COVID-19 virus using the techniques developed in the Fauci project. And that project continued for 3 more years. 3 more years of experimentation, 3 more years of man-made mutation. Now let's look at the actual COVID-19 virus. How does it compare to the ones we know were made earlier in the Wuhan lab? The actual pandemic virus was found to stick to human cells 10 to 20 times tighter than the original SARS virus, which is why it's much more infectious. Scientists would expect increases in infectiousness to happen through cycles of mutation, but with this virus, it was there from the start. In a paper published in February 2020, Shi Zhengli confirms that the backbone of the pandemic virus matches one from the Wuhan Institute's library of collected samples. Their 2017 paper describes how they swapped parts of coronavirus found in other animals into bat coronavirus strains in order to make more infectious man-made versions. And sure enough, the pandemic virus looks like a combination of 2 very different bat viruses mixed with parts of a virus from a completely different species. Could something like that occur in nature? That's what Peter Daszak is saying. Quote, maybe a farmer got infected or a farmer's animals and they were shipped into the markets. If a person brings it in or an animal, that virus will spread. And it looks like that's what happened here. If we're to believe that natural origin story, here are the coincidences that would have had to happen. Multiple different species of bats in South China would have to infect each other and some other unknown animal. Then either these animals or an infected human would need to have traveled 1,000 miles without infecting anyone until they got to Wuhan. In its first incarnation, before any mutations, it would have been 10 to 20 times more infectious than any previously observed virus. And most incredibly of all, the infected animal or human would have somehow chosen to make their 1,000-mile trek to the only place in all of China with a lab that had the world's most extensive collection of the viruses it was already infected with, and the one place in the entire world that carried out genetic research which matched that virus. We're not suggesting for a second that the coronavirus was created or released as a bioweapon, but lab accidents happen. That is literally the reason the Obama administration stopped this kind of research. During the SARS epidemic, 2 researchers studying that virus in a lab in China became infected and sparked an outbreak. Another researcher in Singapore was infected with SARS, and he wasn't even studying it. Other people in his lab were. Even with the proper precautions, these leaks can happen. The researcher in Singapore was working in a lab with a biosafety level 3 rating, the second highest possible. A lab with a biosafety rating of 4 was built in the Wuhan Institute in 2015, but they'd been doing bat coronavirus research years before then, in less safe settings, and even after the higher safety rating, there were concerns about it. In 2018, the US Embassy in China repeatedly sent diplomats to the lab, who after touring it warned that it had serious safety and management weaknesses. And just last week, the State Department said that several researchers at the lab became sick in the fall of 2019 with COVID symptoms. It was also reported in January that Matt Pottinger, President Trump's deputy national security advisor, privately told a group of British officials that a, quote, growing body of evidence supported the idea that the virus leaked from the Wuhan lab. Here on the record is Sir Richard Dearlove, former head of MI6, the UK's CIA. Quote, "It's an engineered escapee from the Wuhan Institute. I'm not saying anything other than the fact that it was the result of an accident." These obvious lab risks are why the Obama administration tried to stop this research back in 2014. When you modify a bat virus to the point where it can spread from human to human through the air, you're playing with fire. The Trump administration cut funding for this research last year. Why on earth didn't Fauci stop it as soon as the Obama moratorium was announced back in 2014? For nearly a year, scientists and reporters have been digging into the lab origin theory, most notably Alina Chan from the Broad Institute, Ian Birrell in the Daily Mail, and Nicholson Baker in New York Magazine. The response from the medical establishment has been shocking. Instead of trying to find out what actually happened, they've been pushing a cover-up. In February 2020, Peter Daszak organized an open letter in The Lancet trashing the lab origin theory. In February! How could they possibly know? There'd been no investigation, nothing. Then in November last year, he was made the chief of an international task force investigating the virus's origins. It's a laughable conflict of interest. He's even on the WHO investigation team that arrived in China on the 13th, an investigation which, unbelievably, has no plans to investigate the lab leak theory. This establishment cover-up tells us something. Why are they so desperate to rule out the most likely explanation without even investigating it? Because that would embarrass the two most powerful governments in the world. The Chinese government, whose lab in Wuhan may have allowed the virus to leak. And worse still, our own government, which, based on the evidence we have laid out tonight, in 2014 commissioned the research that produced this virus in the first place. This week, President Biden made Fauci his chief medical advisor with an enhanced role. In the light of the documents and the evidence we've presented tonight, that role is completely untenable. Fauci must step aside until we get to the bottom of his role in creating, unintentionally, of course, this catastrophic global pandemic. We need to know why he didn't stop funding this research after the Obama administration's ban, and most important of all, are we still funding this research, which could potentially lead to another pandemic? Here's Dr. Fauci talking to Rachel Maddow this week.
I think you're going to see a lot of transparency. You know, you might not see everybody as often as you want, but you're not going to see deliberate holding back of good people when the press asks for them.
Well, we did ask for him. Seems he only likes to talk to people who fawn all over him. We reached out to Fauci, the NIH, and Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance for comment and got back nothing in return. If you want to see the documents for yourself, you can. We'll share all the links. Just follow us at Steve Hilton X and at NextRev FNC. Much more on these explosive revelations straight ahead. Don't go away. Welcome back. You just heard our investigation into the origins of the coronavirus. Joining me now to discuss it all, Fox News contributor and columnist for the New York Post, Miranda Devine. Miranda, just to recap, it looks to us, having looked at the documents and the paper trail and the money trail, that the most likely explanation, we can't be sure, but the most likely explanation is that this virus was the result of a genetic research project commissioned by Dr. Fauci in contravention of a ban on that kind of research that was put in by the Obama administration in 2014. What do you make of it?
Exactly, Steve. And the irony, tragically, is that that ban by the Obama administration was forced on them by a group of about 300 scientists, eminent scientists, who knew that this gain of function research, this Frankenstein research, was so dangerous to be interfering with viruses to ensure that they are more infective in humans is just asking for trouble, especially because we've seen so many lab accidents. And so when the ban happened, unfortunately, Dr. Fauci and Peter Razek, as you just mentioned, decided to get around the ban by doing that research or directing that research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which already had a subpar safety record. As we know, even the Chinese government was worried about it. And that money and that expertise went flowing into Wuhan, and they were doing these dangerous experiments that were banned in America. And the upshot is, you know, most likely what we see, because every apolitical, honest virologist in the world says that the most likely explanation for the pandemic is that that coronavirus was engineered in the Wuhan lab and it escaped through an accident.
And this is the part of it that we've really added the detail to tonight, which is it was engineered at the direct request of Dr. Fauci and then through the project that he commissioned. An extraordinary development.
Well, Dr. Fauci was the most vociferous in objecting to the ban on gain-of-function research. He loved gain-of-function research. He didn't think that it was dangerous, or he thought it was a risk worth taking. Clearly, it's not. To be mucking around with these viruses and making them infective to humans when they're not in nature is dangerous. And it's striking that the two people who are the most pushing back the most on the lab leak theory are Anthony Fauci and Peter Daszak. They both of them said that it didn't happen. And Peter Daszak is over there in China right now. He is the only American representative on the World Health Organization investigation into the source of that virus.
Yes.
And he doesn't want to go and investigate the Wuhan virology lab. He was over there in October of 2019, which is when we know that the virus first started percolating. That may have been just before or around the time that the virus escaped from the lab, if that's the way it happened. So, you know, he is not being straight with the public when he talks about this as not being a possibility. And I think he really ought to not pretend that these viruses, that bat viruses just mutate so easily, and that he's telling us that millions of Chinese have got some sort of antibodies to bat viruses. Even his own research doesn't show that. So he's not being straight. There's quite a few questions that he needs to answer. He really should come on your show, as should Dr. Fauci, because at the moment there's a lot of really circumstantial evidence showing that they are trying to stop the world from finding out where this virus came from, and that's crucial.
Again, I commend Steve Hilton for what is some of the finest and most courageous investigative reporting, because where Steve and I share a lot of different views on different things, no one else in the media and television has done what he's done. Now, because of his position, there's a probability that many people, journalists, will pick it up and run with it. But let's now watch how the big effort is to protect Anthony Fauci, to protect the vaccine makers, to protect the official narrative, and to denigrate everyone else and to try to say, don't believe those people. It's all lies. No, it's not lies. What you just saw is the truth. Share it with everyone you can. Mind you, there's a group of people out there who I believe some are agent provocateurs. They're intentionally making false statements with the hope that other people who do not know how to fact check correctly will spread it on. But then there's the accurate information, and we check everything because we're scholars. We have a background in this. So the information you just saw is accurate. And you saw how he deconstructed the National Institute of Health excuses. They've been caught. The evidence is there. Now we, the people, have to push back in a nonviolent but assertive manner to show you have no sovereignty over our bodies, let alone our minds. You can control the public discourse, but you cannot control my ability to turn you off, walk away from Wikipedia, walk away from the New York Times, walk away from the Washington Post, Rachel Maddow, walk away from the White House, walk away from the House, the Senate, walk away from the agencies, the CDC, walk away because there are millions of outstanding physicians, scientists, journalists, and citizen activists, educators, sociologists, psychologists, who have the answers that we need to rebuild confidence in us as a nation, heal our wounds, and bring people together so that we're not fighting one another. So we've unified so we can push back against the tyranny of fascism. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you very much for watching, and have a nice day.